The following program is sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.
Welcome to From the Median, a daily report from the front line of the pro-life movement, discussing two worldviews that are driving our culture in opposite directions. From the Median asks, which side of the road are you on? What direction do you want our culture to go? Tune in as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life. And now your host, Molly Smith.
Good evening and welcome to From the Median, where we are concerned with the middle ground, not just to understand both sides of an argument, but also to awaken the consciences of those who are neutral or indifferent to this, the greatest civil rights movement of all times, the pro-life movement. This evening, we continue our Bringing America Back to Life series. Tonight, we will feature a presentation from our 2024 convention. Our speakers' ideas will inspire you with principles, experiences, and wisdom as they join us to pave the way back to life through prayer, action, voting, and education. I am pleased to introduce Chloe Cole, a poised and articulate 19-year-old young woman who passionately advocates against the practice of transitioning minors. Driven by a noble mission to safeguard children from potentially harmful ideologies and medical interventions, Chloe draws from her personal experience to shed light on distressing consequences of gender-affirming care for adolescents. Having embarked on her own transitional journey at the tender age of 12, only to subsequently detransition at 16, Chloe speaks with first-hand authority on the deeply traumatic effects experienced by minors undergoing such treatments.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for hosting me today, and thank you all for coming here today. My name is Chloe Cole, and today I stand before you as a voice for a cohort of boys, girls, and young men and women who are often misunderstood and overlooked, the detransitioners. I am here not just to share my own journey, but to make a call for action, to fight for the truth and for our most vulnerable. My story is a testament the danger and abuses that the young generations are being subjected to all around the country, but also to the miracles that God brings those of us who are hurt and lost, and what it really means to love and to be loved. I hope that my time here today will not only bring much needed attention to these abuses of children and families in our own communities, but also that it will bring hope and encouragement to you all to fight for your community and families and to better our country and the world around us. Adolescence is the ultimate journey for identity and belonging. And everyone who's going through it or has already gone through it knows just how vulnerable and lonely of a period it can be. And in a public school environment, this feeling of vulnerability is often amplified. Many children struggle to fit in as they grapple with social dynamics that can be challenging for them and often unforgiving. The pressure to conform to your peers or to societal expectations can be incredibly overwhelming. And some develop feelings of confusion about their identity and isolation. It's of the essence that we ensure every teenager is surrounded by a strong, loving community and family to guide them and to ensure that they grow up into healthy, independent adults, because they all depend on sober-minded adults to guide them through their formative years, to protect them from making life-altering decisions that they may not only regret, but could hurt them for life. And that feeling of isolation is one that I am all too familiar with. Because for almost the entirety of my childhood and adolescence, I struggled to fit in, to feel like I had a purpose, that I was loved and needed by anybody around me. And I was desperately searching for an identity. School wasn't a haven of learning or connection or making friends for me. It was just a constant reminder of my inability to fit the conventional molds. I went years feeling this deep-seated feeling of not ever belonging, of being fundamentally different from everybody around me. And this led me down the path of medical gender transition, where I thought I had finally found meaning in my life. From a very young age, I had been a tomboy. I was the youngest of five children, and I especially looked up to my older brothers and my boy cousins. I wanted to be cool and tough and smart and funny just like they were. I didn't really ever feel like I had much of a connection to most of my female role models. And it always felt like there was something that was setting me apart from the girls and women in my family, at school, and around me. It was lonely growing up feeling that way. I felt like I was too eccentric, like nobody around me, especially the girls, really understood me. I found it hard to connect with them. I was bullied from my early elementary school years up until my late middle school years. I started puberty early, with my breasts coming in at roughly the age of 8 or 9. And there was the added pressure of growing up in a very media-oriented and hyper-sexualized environment. I was learning of all of these, frankly, inappropriate ideas from my peers, from the internet, from social media, that reinforced this idea that my worth as a woman came from my body. It came from my vanity and my sexuality, which, especially for a young girl still in elementary school, that is terrifying. That is a lot of pressure. And I felt like I was being forced to grow up faster than I could keep up with. Like I was being looked at almost as if I were an adult woman instead of a child. I was not really raised with a foundation of faith. My Filipino mother was raised Catholic, and my father was raised Mormon. And I was brought to church up until I was roughly about 4 or 5 years old. And after that, they stopped taking me. I once asked my dad why, and he told me that he and my mother didn't want to feel like they were forcing any system of belief on me, that they wanted to encourage me to build a belief system and values of my own. But without that solid foundation, I feel like, looking back retrospectively, there was a hole in my life. There was conflicts in my identity. I didn't understand why I was made the way that I was. Why I was a girl instead of a boy when I thought I would be so much happier if I had been born that way. I didn't have much in the way of a moral foundation or sense of purpose. And for years, I was fighting to find exactly that. And through my usage of social media, I was introduced to these communities where I would begin learning that living the way that I was made was optional. That I didn't have to live in fear of becoming a woman. That I could opt out of it. That my problems with my body, with fitting in, or because I was made wrong. Because I had the brain of a boy in a girl's body. I started to believe that I was supposed to be a boy, that I wouldn't be happy unless I pursued this path of transition. And at just 12 years old, I made a new identity for myself, and I named myself Leo. I decided that I would come out to my mother and my father and my family through a letter. I wrote to them asking me to be referred to by my preferred name and pronouns and to call me their son, that I hoped that they would love me just as they always have. And they did. And they wanted to show their concern and their love and their care for me. But they were at a loss of what to do for me in this situation. This was something that they had never heard from any of my four older siblings. And they didn't feel like they knew enough or were equipped as my mom and dad to raise me through this. So they started doing their research. They started looking up online what to do with me. And everything that they found pointed them in the direction of only affirming this identity. But they were sensible about this. They could see that it was related to my struggles with trying to fit in, with being an awkward, tomboyish, creative girl about to blossom into an adult woman. They didn't want me to be making any permanent decisions that would affect my body or my development. And they thought that by sending me to a therapist, I would be helped through these feelings. That I would just be allowed to be a kid and to grow up without any intervention. But they were completely taken aback by what was about to happen next. They were not allowed to partake in my therapy sessions. They were not allowed to step into the room with me. And they were not followed up with by the psychiatrist or by the psychologist after these appointments. They had no idea what was actually being discussed or what was going on in my life or in my head. They were not empowered by the adults around us who are supposed to help me, help them to raise me into a healthy woman. Instead, when they talked to them, when they pushed back at all, when they brought up their concerns that they had for me, the doctors pushed back immediately. They were told that there was no other choice for me, that I was a boy, that this is my genuine identity. And so were these treatments. And if I wasn't affirmed in this identity and in my desire to modify my body and to stop my development, they said to my mom and dad, that it would be very likely that I would commit suicide. They cited the highest suicide statistics in the transgender community, effectively coercing them into giving in to my naive desires. And when you're a mother or a father or a caretaker of a child that you love, when you're told by a doctor that your child could die, that they have a serious condition that needs treatment, what wouldn't you do but take the cure that was given to you and your child? At just 13 years old, I was placed on my very first medical intervention. It was a drug called Lupron, and they used it to suppress my puberty and halt it in its tracks. I was already 4 years into puberty, and the blocking of all the sex hormones in my body basically sent me into a childhood onset menopause. I was halfway through my eighth grade year of middle school, and I was already experiencing hot flashes and these uncomfortable feelings of heat searing through my body, of itchiness throughout my limbs and my torso, of burning and tingling in my limbs. I was very lethargic in my day-to-day. I started becoming apathetic. It's no way for a 13-year-old girl to live. After just a few months of having my puberty suppressed, I was put on male hormones to masculinize my body. This drug was powerful. The physical changes were almost immediate, coming within the next few weeks and the next few months. My face and my body started to make me look more and more like a boy every day. And my voice dropped very quickly. By the time that I was in high school, I had a deeper voice than most of the boys my age going into my freshman year. And yet, everybody around me during that point in time, all my other classmates, or people who I went to elementary school with, they knew that I was a girl. I wasn't fooling anybody. And so I decided I wouldn't make any further effort to transition until I entered my freshman year of high school. But that didn't mean that I wasn't still having social difficulties. People that year were picking on me just for my different presentation. And there was one particular boy who would harass me throughout the school year, physically assaulting me, spitting on me, throwing paper at me. My teachers, my classmates would see this, and they would look the other way every time. And one day towards the very end of the year, he went too far. And in a classroom full of about 30 or so other students, I was sexually assaulted. And nobody ever said a thing. I felt like I had to keep this to myself because now I was in the mindset of, I'm a boy. And if I try to tell anybody about this, they're never going to take me seriously. And I felt so little. Because when he treated me the way that he did, nobody ever spoke up. Nobody ever reached out to me. Nobody asked me if I was okay. Nobody else reported what happened, even while the teacher was right there. I stayed quiet. I didn't report what happened for years. But that fear of being weak, of being vulnerable, of even being seen as a woman, remained as a scar in my mind for years to come, even as I tried to repress the memory. And the sexual trauma was never explored during the course of my transition. By the time that I went to my high school years, I had already looked like a boy. And the social dynamics were starting to change for me. Eventually, I was being treated just like a boy. I was using the male restroom and locker room facilities. And at first, all these changes brought a sense of validation, of affirmation to my life. I was finally living as the boy I thought I always was supposed to be. And yet, as I advanced deeper into the destructive path that these irresponsible, willfully ignorant adults led me down, the damage started to snowball into every other area of my life. I started to have physical complications with my urinary tract. I began having urinary tract infections and symptoms, and even blood in my urine about every month or so. I started to dissociate from my body, from myself, from everybody around me. Because every day I was living a lie. I was putting on a mask every day. I was taking injections every week to maintain this image of a faux male body. I was wearing a compression device to hide my breasts, to feel like I was safe, to make sure that nobody would ever know again that I was a girl. But every time that I would come home, I would take this off and I'd look down at my body. My breasts and my feminine form were still there. And I wanted to run away. And I hated myself. Every issue that I had before my transition was still there. And now it was so much worse. The testosterone made it incredibly difficult for me to even just process my emotions. I was very prone to angry outbursts, to depressive episodes, but I couldn't even cry. I couldn't even get to the point of crying a lot of the time. And when I could do it for hours with no release. I would feel just the same. I started to become lonely as the feeling of affirmation went away, as being a boy, or at least being perceived as a boy, became my new normal. I became lonely. It felt like nobody knew the real me, and that I couldn't talk about my struggles in my day-to-day that I was experiencing. I turned again to the internet, and because I was so lonely, and because of the influence of the male hormones on my body, I became a vulnerable target for adult men on the internet who wanted to take advantage of me sexually. But every single part of this was destroying me and sending me deeper into a hole. My grades and my school performance and attendance were abysmal by the time I was in my sophomore year. I was sent back to therapy after years of not going, and I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder. They decided that the best course of action would not be to evaluate whether this was a consequence of my transition, but instead to add to the pharmaceutical cocktail that I was on, which didn't work, of course. I became worse. And in spite of my circumstances, I was allowed to go into surgery. The summer just after my sophomore year of high school, at 15 years old, I underwent an elective double mastectomy to remove my breasts. And the regret was almost immediate. Every day afterward, I would have to undress and redress my wounds, the scars and the skin grafts that they used as part of my surgery. And when I looked down at myself, it was like I was looking at a battlefield on my chest. It was too painful for me to bear. But I couldn't put a name to this feeling, because I thought that I was so deep into it, that there was no way back out. Everybody in my life knew me as Leo. They knew me as their brother, as their son, their grandson, a boy that they knew from school. And I no longer looked nor sounded like a girl. How could I even think of coming back out? In spite of what my doctors had told me to expect, with each step of my transition, I only became more cognizant of the fact that no matter how much I tried to change my body, I could not and should not change the fact that I was born female. These scars on my body only became reminders of what I could never have. I could no longer run from reality because it was eating me alive to do so. 11 months, just 11 months after I lost my breasts, I came to the epiphany that one day I wanted to become a mother. I wanted to have a family. And I wanted to grow into a woman. And I so grieved those many years that my transition took from me, from my childhood. It was an incredibly difficult decision to make because I knew that things would never be where they were. But I knew that I had to stop living this lie every single waking moment of my life. And I stopped transitioning. I stopped taking the shots. I didn't know what to do with myself then, but I knew I was done. Subsequently, I lost all of my friends at school. I was subject to vicious bullying from the transgender community. This community of people who I thought of as a second family, who I loved and who I thought loved me. And quitting hormones was a test of my mind and of my body. I already had complications from all three of the interventions, and the psychological trauma and the abrupt stop to medicating was taking its toll on my health. I wasn't getting the care or guidance from any of my doctors who initially put me through this transition. I had no idea what to do or what my life would look like from there on. But I persevered, as much as I didn't want to some days. And I hoped even just a little bit, that one day I'd be able to make a real friend. That I would feel like I belonged somewhere. That this would bring me peace. It would bring me happiness. And that one day I would be able to build a family of my own. And I am incredibly lucky just to be able to say that I have healed. And I am much healthier and happier and whole than I ever was while chasing a lie. I didn't know what to even call myself for a very long time until I came to terms with my femininity and I began to realize that being a woman in my body, my birth name, and my life were all gifts from my mother and my father and from God. And now that I am an adult woman, I refuse to be bullied into silence ever again. Because now I know that my experience is far from unique. I've met hundreds of traumatized young men and women who were started on the pipeline of transition. Many of them were only children, just like me. And many of them also were young adults whose hearts were wounded and their pain ignored. But it was their stories of moving forward that lifted me up and gave me hope for my future, but also made me realize I could no longer stay silent about this. I felt called to give back to them. I felt called to give back to my mom and my dad and my family. And when my nieces and my nephew came to the picture, I realized just how precious innocence is. And I felt this duty to protect them, to protect any and every child and family from going through what mine did with me. Ever again. At 17 years old, I decided that I would go public with my story. I started small, using the social media platform Twitter. And I didn't think it would really get anywhere. I didn't think that it would ever take over my life as it has. I just hope that my story would reach some family or somebody struggling with this. and that would help them. But I was shocked at how quickly people were starting to take notice of my story. I started having families. I started having other people who had been through the exact same thing reaching out to me. And eventually, reporters and media networks. And eventually, I was invited out to testify for the first time on a piece of legislation to help protect children in the state of Louisiana. And since then, I've spoken to many more state legislatures and all across the country, even to Congress on my 19th birthday, and to communities, to churches, to youth groups, and with organizations like Turning Point USA and Young America's Foundation. And it's been an incredible journey. Along the way, I was brought back to faith. I started being surrounded by people of faith. Throughout my adolescence, I'd always been agnostic, and I felt as though with humanity's imperfections, that there has to be something else out there. And there were moments when I felt that I was being guided and watched, even while I was in the deepest of pain. And being surrounded by people of faith has helped me to realize that now, no matter how deep of a hole I had dug for myself, God only ever saw me as his daughter. He has only ever loved me, even when I turned away. And there was never any moments when I was alone without him. And as the years have gone by, as I've gone through this journey, nearly half of all the states here in the U.S. have since then implemented laws and other measures to ensure that no other child is harmed like I and many other children have been. But legislation alone is not going to be sufficient in this battle for humanity. We are the ones who need to give these vulnerable children and young men and women a reason not to dive straight into transitioning. I wished that someone would have told me that I was made in God's image, that I was perfect the way that I was. But I was bullied for being different, and the adults around me turned their cheek the other way. And all the kids who are getting wrapped up in this ideology of gender are incredibly smart, creative, kind. They're incredible, and they have so much to offer this world. And yet they're being convinced that these wonderful qualities that they have, the things that make them different, are pathological and need fixing. Every single one of us has a responsibility to take care of these children, to take care of our communities. We have to be proactive in the lives of the people around us. It truly takes a village to raise a child, and that requires stepping outside of our comfort zone sometimes. We all must learn how to become comfortable with the uncomfortable, to push ourselves to do better, because there always will be room for improvement, and everybody around us is relying on us to do better. By being the change that you want to see, you will encourage others to follow and to grow too. And never, ever let fear get in the way of unabashedly speaking the truth and sticking up for your values and your loved ones, and certainly the Word of God. The prospect of putting yourself out there, of speaking truthfully, even in love and in faith, is incredibly intimidating. But doing the compassionate thing sometimes means doing things that you may not want to, or that you feel pressure from others not to do. You might be afraid that you could lose your friendships. You could lose your relationships with your family, your connections, and even your job. But that being said, the connections that you will want to keep around will not be of people who expect you to stay silent for their own comfort. Real friends will listen. Real friends will push each other to do better. They will speak up when they see something wrong, and they will stick around even in times of disagreement and crisis. By having courage, you will strengthen your relationships with the people around you who are of good characters, who are of good character and strong morals. And even if you find that it brings disruption or chaos into your life, keep going. Put your life into God's hands and trust in Him. No matter how much you feel you have lost, you will gain so much more in your life by speaking and living truthfully. It just takes time. It won't be easy, but this isn't about easy. This is about holding ourselves responsible for our families and communities and the good of the world around us. I know what it feels like to be terrified of what comes ahead. I know what it feels like to want to run away and to want to die. I know what it feels like to live in sin and shame and confusion and uncertainty on a daily basis. And there is not a single person on the planet who deserves to feel that. And that is why I fight. That is why I speak here today, because no child or man or woman deserves to feel that way or to believe that they are a burden or a mistake. The truth is that there is no such thing as being born in the wrong body. Whether you're a man or a woman, you're old or young, ill or well, your very life is a precious gift. There is beauty in the way that we all were created, and we were only given one life on this earth. So no matter how difficult it gets, we must keep on fighting in the name of love and of God's truth. Thank you.
Chloe, thank you so very much for sharing your incredible story. I think I probably speak for every one of the hundreds of people in this room right now saying your courage is beyond, it's next level. Thank you for that. We do have a lot of questions, and we'll try to work through as many of them as we can, and you can feel free to be as brief or as in-depth in your responses. The first one is what I just said. Thank you for your courage. You are such an inspiration to all of us. Can you speak out, Chloe, about the positives and negatives of the current legislation in the U.S. regarding this issue? Obviously, you said you've worked with several legislatures, including ours. Can you talk about where this is headed legislatively?
So I think it's nearly about 20 or 25 states or just under that have passed legislation to protect kids from undergoing these experimental procedures. And many of those were passed just within the past 2 to 3 years, which has been, it's been incredible to watch and to have been a part of. But there are some common problems with some of these states' bills. Many of them end up skimping on what they're banning. Many of them only go so far as to ban the surgeries and not the hormones or the puberty blockers, because these legislators are being convinced that only the surgeries or only the hormones are permanent. There's an idea going around that puberty blockers are reversible, which is not true. I've been on them. I have lasting effects from them. Namely, I am experiencing joint pains and shooting pains at my back. And in many children, they cause issues with bone density. Many children end up developing bone fractures, and their skeletons never really fully develop into, they never really develop to full adult maturity. And you're interfering with the very process that makes a child become an adult. There is not a single part of that that is reversible. That is months. That is years being taken away from a child's development. And that is a lot of time for a child to be missing out on. Not a single part of this is reversible. And every single part of it must be barred from children accessing it. There also, of course, are many states who are on the opposite side of this issue, who are protecting doctors and encouraging them and incentivizing them to do this to children. In my home state, doctors are not allowed to push back against a child's transgender identity in any way, because it's considered conversion therapy out of a child's transgender identity. So by this definition, even explorative therapy, or just letting the child grow up and be a child, could cost a practitioner their license and their job. And in 2022, California passed SB 107 that made our state into a sanctuary state for children who are trans-identified or their parent or guardian to run away to and to transition them.
We can move on. I think the point is very clear. Chloe, what do you recommend parents say to doctors who give the advice that your parents were given?
It's criminal to get in the way of a child and their parents, to create that rift between them, to act like you know their own child better than they do, and to lie to them that their life is at risk. It's irresponsible to speak of suicide in such a way, to say that, well, your child is going to be dead if you don't give them these treatments right away. Because it's not true. These treatments are not proven to address suicidality and oftentimes only make it worse. And there is never any one cause of suicidality. It takes a lot of pain in one person's life to get to the point of suicidality, of thinking of or attempting or completing suicide.
Chloe, my niece believes she is male. Most of the extended family supports her. She is now 19 and has forbidden her mom to give any of us her college address. How can we advocate for her to know the truth?
Did they say that she was 19?
19 now, yes.
for adults, for parents of trans-identified adults, it is a lot harder to address once they're out of your house and legally they are outside of your care. But my best advice is to keep loving that girl. Treat her the same as you always have. Let her know that no matter what happens, she always will be your child. And it can be incredibly difficult to even try to get to the point. But you have to try to have those hard conversations with her, even if it's uncomfortable, even if you don't want to, even if she doesn't want to. Because she's still relying on you. She needs somebody around her to establish reality, to hear what she's feeling, but to keep her grounded in the reality that the way that she was made is not a mistake, that it's beautiful, and that it's okay just to be different.
Next, Chloe, what is your reaction to the recently released WPATH documents?
I mean, it's, if anything, it's really only affirmed everything that we've known about these treatments, about how this is conducted. It's criminal how that organization is being run. It just goes to show who it's being run by. It was putting the blame on these patients, many of whom are mentally ill, have comorbid conditions, and were children at the time of being administered these procedures. They were operating on developmentally delayed children. They were telling schizophrenic patients and children that they could consent to life-changing procedures. They've been exposed. And the house of cards is about to fall down.
Amen. Chloe, are you a Christian now?
I am.
Best answer I've heard all day to any question. Do you think there is a similarity between trans thinking and homosexual thinking?
I personally think that they are different issues, because gay people, gays and lesbians, they don't take medication. They're not told that they have to chop off or change parts of their bodies in order to pursue their sexual orientation. And nothing about transgenderism is rooted in science. Every single part of it is based on fantasy, based on the idea of what is essentially a gendered soul. They call it a gender identity, this disembodied part of yourself that somehow determines who you are and requires you to be medicated for it. But I don't think that I think that they are completely separate issues.
This is about costs. How were the surgeries and meds paid for? If the payments were through government resources, was the detransition also covered by SANE?
So there are many states where this is covered completely by insurance, by law. And doctors and hospital systems are incentivized to go through these treatments on their patients. And in my home state, that also is the case. Every single part of my transition, from the blockers to the hormones to the surgery, were all covered by insurance. And this effectively incentivizes these vulnerable young men and women and these patients to go through this. But at the same time, any reversal surgeries, any reversal treatments or retrenchment itself is not covered at all by insurance. There are no codes to bill for. There aren't even standards of care for those of us who experience regret and want to stop transitioning.
When you went through your, or you're still going through, but your particular beginning of a detransition period, did you apply for some sort of coverage? Did you ask about it, inquire? What did they tell you?
It was basically impossible to communicate with my doctors anymore. I went back to them. I went back to my endocrinologist, my therapist at the time, the surgeon, the gender specialist who referred me to surgery, and trying to get anything out of them, even guidance on things as simple as how do I stop taking hormones? How do I treat these other complications that I'm having from these procedures? What are my options if I want to restore my breasts? Nothing. It was going nowhere. Nowhere, no matter how much I tried. And because I'm no longer considered transgender, if I were to get any restorative procedures done, it wouldn't be covered at all. I would have to pay out of pocket.
Chloe, this will be the last one. You said that you felt like you were born in the wrong body, and that is what a lot of men who transition to women and women who want to transition to men say. How do you explain the existence of the non-binary or the I'm neither male nor female? I wasn't born in the right or the wrong body. I was born in a non-human body, and some of the other dozens and dozens of identities out there.
The answer is very simple. There's no such thing. We all know that.
You've been listening to Chloe Cole, a passionate advocate against the practice of transitioning minors, and our 2024 presenter at the Bringing America Back to Life convention. Thank you all for joining me this evening. As I say goodnight and God bless each and every one of you, I'd like to close with the words of the Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel. There may be times when we are powerless to prevent injustice, but there must never be a time when we fail to protest.
From the Median is listener supported. Visit our website, fromthemedian.org, for further information or to make a donation to continue to make this radio program possible. Email us, radionews@fromthemedian.org, or call 440-668-4049. Through our fromthemedian.org website, you can download this or previous programs for your listening pleasure, or sign up to receive our weekly preview of upcoming guest interviews. Tune in every weeknight at the same time to listen to another great interview on From the Median as we plan the route that takes us back to the culture of life.
This program has been sponsored by Cleveland Right to Life and is responsible for its content.